decided to write up, well, I already had slides for half of the stuff. I decided to write up the whole thing and make too much, many errors otherwise. Okay, so the last part is about applications and examples. Really lively. Okay, so the first thing I will talk is this old notion about decomposable operators due to Apostol and Foyers from the late 60s, where you... I can see you then, that's a good thing. Okay, so this is a setting of operators on a general Banach space. So you define a set of operators which has a nice spectral theory where you have spectral subspaces in some sense. So, and I don't, this may not be the original definition, it has been polished over the years, but at least nowadays the definition is that an operator on a Banach space is decomposable. If whenever you have an open covering of a complex plane by two open sets, then you can find two closed T-invariant subspaces, Y set, which that do not need to be, well, the sum without closure should be equal to X, and they may have an untrivial intersection, it doesn't matter, and the spectrum of T cut down to Y should be contained in the first open set, the spectrum of T cut down to the set should be in the other open set. So you somehow assume that you are able to cut the spectrum where you like it. And then, oh yeah, thank you. And then they have a very nice characterization of those operators, namely an operator in B of X is decomposable if it has a spectral capacity, which means that you can find a function from the closed sets in the complex plane to the set of closed T-invariant subspaces of X with the following properties, namely the, and these we should consider these as spectral subspaces. So the spectral subspace corresponding to its empty set is zero, so the whole complex plane is X. Whenever you have an open covering of the complex plane, then, well, to make sense of it, you have to close them up, and then the algebraic sum without closure of these subspaces should be equal to X. It will respect intersections, and finally, if you cut T down to the spectral subspace E of F, then the spectrum of the operator is inside F. And well, I'll come back to the in a minute that not all, in fact, in any 2-1 factor you can find operators that doesn't satisfy these that is not decomposable. However, a positive result in this direction, namely Voiculescu circle operator and more generally the class of DT operators that Dykema and I invented actually are decomposable in this sense. So for comparison, let me just write up this joint main theorem again with Hannes Schultz. So it's, we don't work with a spectrum, instead we work with a bound measure and try to cut that instead of the spectrum itself, which we may not be able to control. But this spectral set here called KTB has some resemblance with a spectral capacity. In fact, one is certainly satisfied. Two, satisfy if you allow to take closure afterwards and not just the algebraic sum. Three, satisfy. Four, it's not necessarily satisfied. The only we will know is that, I mean, if we use the K TB as the EF when B is closed, then we'll know that the support of the bound measure will sit inside it, of the cut down operator will sit inside F, but we are not able to control the spectrum. And there is no way to control the spectrum in any general setting. If one wanted to have a theory for all operators into one factors. Okay, but there's this theorem that says that if our operator happens to be decomposable, then this map that we construct is exactly the spectral capacity of T. And in particular, whenever you cut T down to the corresponding spectral subspace given by Clausewitz, and not only the support of bound measure is inside F, but actually the spectrum itself is inside F. But that observation, this is not deep certainly, can easily be used to construct non-decomposable operators. First of all, if you have any to one factor, you can plot in a copy of the hyperfinite to one factor in there. And in the hyperfinite factor, then by choosing a sequence of orthogonal projection with some one, you can actually put in the direct sum of the n by n matrix, where n goes for 1 to infinity. And one can look at this operator, which I also considered yesterday. And it so happened that this one has spectrum, the closed disk, but the bound measure is concentrated in zero. See, here is an example where the support of the bound measure is a strict subset of the spectrum. But the latter thing here will give you that, nu t is equal delta zero, it's easy to see that these subspaces are either zero or the whole thing there. The whole thing, if zero is in the broader set, otherwise it's zero. So, in particular, we get that since zero is in this set, then the corresponding spectral subspace is the whole Hilbert space. But if we reflect T to full Hilbert space, we still have T, so the spectrum is a disk and it's not contained in zero. So this condition there is not fulfilled. So, in fact, whenever you have an operator for where the spectrum and the support of the bound measure does not coincide, then it cannot be decomposable by the very same argument. Okay, let me take another statement from the first lecture, namely that I'm saying that it follows from the general theorem that for any operator in a 2-1 factor, when form T star to the n, multiply T to the n, take the 1 or 2 nth root, then this will converge in strong operator topology to an operator C, and applying that to T star, this will also exist. And moreover, the spectral subspaces for balls, closed balls with centered balls, centered 0 and radius R, are exactly the standard, or the projection of these are these spectral projections for the self-adjoint operator C. And in the same way, if you want to find a spectral projection for an annulus, which is just the whole plane where you annulus of a type where you just take the full complex plane and take off an open ball at zero, then this can be comes as standard spectral prediction of the other operator D. So these two C and D will in general be very far from commuting, so these spectral subspaces will certainly not be orthogonal. Or not even commuting. Okay, I'll give you the sketch of the proof here. And could go the other way around and say, well, if we look at these spectrums up there, well, I never wrote it up here in the main theorem, but actually it's they're characterized by this uniqueness property, but they can also be characterized by that KTP is the largest T in Rn subspace affiliated with M, such that the restriction of T to that subspace has Brown measure concentrated in B. So in particular, it will follow that K is monotone in B. If you take a bigger Borel set, you get a bigger spectral subspace. So, and you have nice continuity properties. I mean, if you take, if you on the set of Borel sets put this metric to be mu T of the different set, then you'll actually get that the projections onto these spectral subspaces will be continuous with respect to this metric. So in particular, you will get that this is an increasing function. It continues from right. If you take a sufficiently big R, actually just have to be bigger than this modified spectral radius I talked about yesterday, then you get the whole space. So just by standard spectral theory for self-adjoint operators, you'll know that there exists exactly one operator in M plus, such that the spectral projection from 0 to R of C is this particular one. So, and that's half of the proof somehow. This gives a candidate for the limit, and then you, of course, has to go on and prove that this is actually giving the limit. But without having all the spectral theory, you wouldn't have this candidate for the limit. Oh, what I'm doing. So, I claim that this one converts in strong operator topology to C. Now, yesterday I explained, and significant part of the proof of the main theorem was to prove these identities that spectral subspaces coming from closed disk or complex plane missing an open disk can be obtained in this rather strange way. And so for the first one, we have to take psi n h, and then you have to allow a small perturbation of these psi n's, and then t n to the psi n, normal that to the 1 over nth root, should be less or equal to r. Now I put t star n instead, because it's actually the one we need here. And then it turns out that these spaces, this is fairly easy to see that these are perpendicular when orthogonal when S is bigger than R. And but if the Brown measure this circle of radius R is equal to 0, then in the Mountainary circle, then actually you have that these are also a complement of each other. And in particular, you get that these maps are not only strongly continuous from right and left, I think they'll actually be continuous at all subs R bigger than 0, which satisfy this. And actually this can only be fail in counting the many values. And then you just need two simple lemmas, namely, if you have self-adjoint elements in B of H, say positive, uniformly upper bound, and you know that the spectral projection from 0 to R converts the strong operator topology, except for a null set, Lebesgue null set, or here I've written counted many because as we use them, one can actually get that AN converts to A. And it's completely elementary. You, for every delta bigger than zero, you can find an increasing step function, which is continuous from right, such that you have small, these norms are small. I should add that the steps should be made so that you don't hit the bad R's, values of R, but that can of course be arranged. And then, of course, these are coming out as linear combinations of these up here and the identity. So this follows immediately, and then you just let delta go to zero and get the conclusion. The other one I won't even bother to give the proof, namely, if you have projections on a Hilbert space, then you have strong convergence of a sequence of projections to another projection, if and only if, for all psi in the range space of P, the distance for psi to the range space of Pn goes to zero, and at the same time, for all elements in the, also in the kernel of P, the distance of each to the kernel of Pn goes to zero. And then back to the proof of this statement. Well, as a spy lemma, what will it be? Lemma one. You just have to prove that this, you have this strong operator convergence for all but counting many R's. So I take out what I want to take out, namely those R's for which the boundary of the circle of radius R has measure, have non-zero measure. I'll be counting many of these, and for each n, this operator will can have only counting many eigenvalues. So I can assume that for all n, R is not an eigenvalue of this one, which makes things a little bit easier. And then I should probably come with the go back to the definition of these spaces. Okay, and what I'm saying is when, if one give a little allowance, take psi in an ETR prime where R prime is less than R, then actually, basically working with the definition here, one will see that psi is not very far from the spectral subspace of this one with a given R. It's not completely obvious, but I mean, you can sit and work with it. It's not that hard. And so you have this one. Unfortunately for R prime less than R, but then this continuity helps us because in this particular case where this boundary has zero measure, I know that these maps are, this map is strong operator continuous at R, which in particular means, since it's increasing, that the union of all these spaces for R prime less than R will be dense. And therefore you can immediately extend this one to all psi in ETR. Okay, and then a similar argument based on the F T star R double prime sets. Maybe I should put that up again. So we now have to take R double star bigger than R and make a similar approximation, and you end up getting that for also psi, also when you replace R double prime with R, you get that this distance goes to zero. But I have assumed that R was not an eigenvalue of this one, so I can take this to be an open parenthesis instead. So that's just the complement of, I'm missing some parentheses in the end. Yeah, from the disk. So I can write this one as a complement of this one with closed rather than open set. And so if I combine star and double star, star is gone. Then I get by my lemma that the second lemma, and I both condition the second lemma is fulfilled, and you'll get that these projections convert strong operators of probability to this one, which was by definition of C, the indicator function of 0 to R of C. Okay, and then I can use the first lemma to get the T star to the N, T to the N, power 1 over 2N converts to C. And the second statement, about the operator D follows in the same way. You just have to replace T by T star. Okay, the next slides there will be a few slides that you've already seen, because I've just somehow expanded this this example section. So just briefly repeat this Berkelescu third element, that you take a free semicircular system and you form this linear combination of the two semicircular operators. That's called Berkelescu circular operator, and it's not normal. Its Brown measure is spectrum is a closed disk. The Brown measure is the uniform distribution on that disk. So in particular, the support of the Brown measure is equal to the spectrum. Actually, the reason that Fleming Larsen and I was interested in this result was had nothing to do with invariant subspaces at the time. It was classical random matrix theory that tells that if you have a random matrix, n by n matrix of the form where you have n square, independent random matrices, complex random, all with the same distribution, namely with this symmetric Gaussian, rotation symmetric Gaussian density in each variable. That is called the Ginebra ensemble, and that was proved back in the 60s that the eigenvalue distribution of such matrices converts to almost surely to the eigenvalue distribution, uniform distribution on the disk, exactly as over here. And this was somehow expected by Berkelescu's random matrix model, because by Berkelescu's random matrix model, this will be a model for a circular operator, in the sense that these yn's convert in star distribution to y. But the first result we had on spectral subspaces was this particular circle element. I mean, that was long before we had proved that it was actually decomposable, long before we had this general theory of spectral subspaces for Borel set. But there's some, by down-to-earth methods, well, not really, it used quite a lot of random matrix technique to prove it, actually. One has to prove this result that you can somehow cut out a disk and an analysis of the spectrum just by cutting down with a suitable in random subspace actually used this random matrix model together with the fact that that any n by n matrix is unitary equivalent to an upper triangular matrix, and Dyson has computed exactly how what the corresponding joint distribution of the what will be remaining n times n plus 1 divided by 2 elements were, and then we took off from there. But in this case we have a very nice description. We have kr equal to set of sine 8 such that you have the Lim sup. Now being the composable, these bases are the same as the one in the general theory, where we need to have we couldn't write this one. We have had to allow a small perturbation of these psi's. It had to be exchanged by psi in that are close to psi. But at least in this case, it gives exactly the same space. Well, the creator of the nilpotent BT operator, well, the name came from the random matrix models of this, or BT operator, simply because we had an upper triangular matrix with random entries, where those above, strictly above the diagonal was called T's, and those on the diagonal was called D's. So why not call it BT operator? But if the diagonal is zero, you get this special case of a quasi nilpotent BT operator, which is defined by this random matrix model where the entries are as in the Ginebra ensemble, except that we have zeros on and below the diagonal. The distribution of the remaining entries is the same. And then it turns out that this converts in star distribution, which are now made explicit here, not to a circle operator, but to another operator, which can be realized in a 2-1 factor in an essential unique way. I know this is replay, but I'll soon come to some new slides. Okay. So, and a lot of things could be computed about this one. First of all, we were able to prove that it generates a factor. It's quasi nilpotent, the kernel is trivial, the norm, the moments, and the spectral distribution. This is could be called mu. So this mess is what's usually called mu t star t. It's given by this fairly complicated function. And it doesn't follow from Schulz and my theorem anything about this operator, because its bound mass is concentrated in zero. So it was kind of a challenge to try to find out whether this has non-trivial in random subspaces affiliated with the phenomenon but it generates. And the answer is, well, we hope for a counterexample, but it didn't work out that way. And let me tell a little bit about the proof. Let me just leave. I already had this slide, but just to put the theorem free. Namely, that the phenomenon of a general T is actually isomorphic with the free group algebra, and T has a one-parameter family of non-trivial hyperinvariant closed subspaces. Okay, so what goes into the proof? First of all, there's this very nice formula of Schneer D of this kind of mixed moments of T and T star, which can be computed explicit using free probability with amalgamation. Uh, The second way is to make an next point is to make an embedding of this phenomenon that has been generated by T into the free group algebra on two generators. And actually, to take any two self-adjoint element with diffuse spectrum, I mean no atoms, no eigenvalues, then the phenomenon algebra generated with that would just be the free product of W star D with W star X, and those are isomorphic to infinity 0,1. So you get elevate 2 out of it. And so we choose one operator to have uniform distribution on the interval 0,1, the other one to have standard semicircle on distribution. And then we take, if you really think of it in terms of random matrix model, namely that we had our original random matrix sitting here, and then we flip it over and take the conjugate of numbers, so we get a self-adjoint matrix, which will almost be the random matrix model for a circle element, so for a semicircle element. Except that you have zeros in the diagonal, but that doesn't matter. So if you do this, you actually get a semicircle element, and that semicircle will be free from what you get in a limit by taking 1/n, 2/n, n over n, and this called this bn. So in some kind of limit, you will get these operators b and x, which will be free and have these particular distributions, and therefore they generate the free group factor. And to realize T inside there, express them in terms of D and X, and simply see that you can, we only have X, and we want to cut out the upper part of it here, so we somehow do like this by multiplying from left and right through spectral projections in B. There's something wrong there. There should be, I think the one coming from left and the one coming from right should be different. Okay. And then if one bled in goes to infinity, then these become smaller and smaller. In fact, it turns out it converts not only strongly, but it converts a norm to an operator T, which is a copy of the quasi-nilpotent operator, meaning that it has the same star distribution as the quasi-nilpotent operator. So we can work with this instead and forget about random matrices. Okay, then this complicated density function, we can integrate it and get a distribution function for the same probability measure, which will, the spectrum of this one was interval from 0 to E, so you get, and this actually looked like this because the density function goes down like a square root here and then has a logarithmic or like 1 over log lambda up there. So when you integrate it, you get something which is very steep here. Okay. Now, it's not hard to, you have, of course, phenomena generate T sitting inside star X comma V now, which was isomorphic with LFF2. And it's not hard to see when you have these upper triangular random matrices. And then if you cut down with, say, the operator that is 1, 1, down to a certain fractional diagonal, t divided by n, or the integer part of t divided by n, and 0 otherwise, then this will, the subspace corresponding to this, that means the first two n coordinates there, will produce an invariant subspace for this one. And it also works in a limit. So actually, all these subspaces, HT equal this one, are T-invariant subspaces. But the main problem was whether D actually will lie in here, because we wanted affiliated with a given phenomenon for here. And that turned out to be a fairly hard problem, which we solved in a paper in Journal of Functional Analysis in 2004. And the key idea was to look at these operators, T star K, TK, power 1 over K, and then a K in front of it. And if I backtrack a little bit to smear this formula here, then it turns out that what will it be? The K's power and S K and the K's power of T star T has the same moments by smear this moment formula. And therefore, the spectral distribution meshes of the case power of these two are the same, but then it's also the same of the operator itself. So in particular, the spectrum of this SK is again the interval from 0 to E. And then the hard part of the proof was to show that if you take this SK, okay, you want, we hope for something that comes close to the diagonal operator D. And SK all have the same spectral distribution, so namely given by this density function here. So if you should get close to it, you have to transform it to something that has uniform distribution from 0 to 1. But you can do exactly this by composing SK with the distribution function for this. So f of x is integral from 0 to x of phi of t dt. That map will send this distribution over a uniform distribution on the interval. Okay, so at least now these two have the same distribution. And then the hard part was to prove that you actually have convergence here. And this actually uses a lot of special functions. There's a function called complex function set to the e to the set. That's a nice function. The inverse is not an inverse function. It has a lot of branches. It's called Lambert's W functions, and we needed a number of properties of that one to prove this. So actually, today there's no really other example than this one of such quasi-nilpotent operator coming from random matrix. Well, Ken Dijkman have a paper where he showed that if you make a random matrix model based on first the upper triangular random matrix, but allow the variance of the entries to vary over the triangle in some controlled way, then if this variance is constant in some little triangle sitting somewhere along the diagonal, then you can go back to this result and use the properties of this one to see that this one will also have non-trivial invariant, hyper-invariant subspaces. No, non-trivial invariant subspaces. So certainly this one will show that now your D is actually sitting inside M, continue over here. So your D is actually sitting inside M. Hence M is equal. T is equal to this. Because T that was X plus X star. What am I saying? We had inclusion here, yeah. And X is in here because of this, and now D is also there. Therefore we have equality, which was L of F2. Okay, that's exactly this argument. And therefore these spaces wrote up here will form a one-parameter family of closed team-run subspaces, and they will be affiliated with W star T because D is in the phenomenal. Now, still remains the problem whether these were hyperinvariant. And what? You were right. This would go the other way. X was equal to something. Yep. Okay. It took some work, extra work, to show that these HT could actually be obtained somehow in the same way as the spectral subspaces for the circular operator, except that you need this, put these constants in here. And then if you take this space, this space that can be written this way, and it's obvious that these spaces are T hyperinvariant. But then actually, what happens if we allow, in the spirit of this spectral subspaces, if we allow the psi to vary a little bit, so why I call them n here and k here doesn't matter. So psi k should be converted to psi, and then this condition should be replaced by this one. Okay, you will of course get a bigger space. It's also easy to see that it's T hyperinvariant, but actually, in fact, as a part of the proof of the upper formula, it turns out that this one is not the same space. AT prime is 8 of, it's another 8 of FET. I should probably have been smarter if I have taken, put a 1 here, and then on this space I say EX. Because, I mean, then you can see that this function since 0 to 1 and 0 to 1, but it is above the diagonal, so this number is strictly bigger than T.